Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, my next guests already had a bestseller under their belts with their first collaboration in 2019. Gordon's Game charted the highs and lows of Gordon Darcy's incredible rugby career, co-written by Russell Carroll Kelly, author Paul Howard, in other words, who has spent a career and 20 books taking the piss out of rugby, basically, and rugby players. Well, now they've teamed up again for the sequel, and I think the title really is taken straight from, I don't know, Chuck Norris, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Sylvester Stallone, but then again, don't forget the colours of the Leinster jerseys as well. It's called Gordon's Game. Da-da-da-da, Blue Thunder, which sees Gordon get the chance to play for Leinster and help them win the European Cup. Semi-autobiographical thingamabob for smaller and larger kids alike. And Gordon and Paul are with me now. So welcome to the programme to both of you. Paul, I will start with you because you've taken the mick out of rugby players your whole blinking career. Did you get a fright when Gordon's number pops up on your phone initially?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I thought, because I had had, there was a line in one of the more recent Ross O'Carroll Kelly books where Ross got drunk and turned up at Gordon's wife Aoife's Pilates studio, or former Pilates studio. And when I saw Gordon's name pop up on my phone, I thought it might have been about that. it wasn't. He left a message saying he was interested in writing a book. And to be honest, at the beginning, my first reaction was, how am I going to get out of this? Because I thought he wanted to write a straight autobiography. And it was only when he mentioned that he wanted to be a children's book that, you know, it all changed. I just said, that's a fantastic
and
idea.
And Gordon, what about this, I wanted to be a children's book? I mean, let's face it, the 2009 Grand Slam team, there's 14 books. There's only, like, so many different ways you can tell the same stories. And, like, seriously, yeah, you don't want to go for number 15. And is that what you said? Okay, maybe I could write a book, but it's got to be different than the other guys.
I had never planned on actually writing a book. Kind of, you know, everybody has different reasons for writing a book. I just didn't really have any kind of compelling one that was, you know, any burning desire to write one. And it wasn't until I walked with my sister, Shona, and she kind of thought, you know, your life would be very funny in a kid's book. It was meant as kind of a backhanded dig. And I kind of was thinking about it for a little bit, and then I kind of went, actually, there might be something in this. I loved that kind of ideation process in any project, and had gotten as far as I could go, and then I kind of went, okay, there's actually going to be something in this, but I need somebody who knows how to do all this. And I picked up the phone to Paul, and for me, he was the only person that could bring this to life, and thankfully he did say yes.
I mean, the phrase boy's own abridged story of you, is it a boy's own abridged story of you? I mean, how much of it is you? How much of it is true?
Pretty much everything. So the way, I suppose, the first book we spent an awful lot of time coming up with the rules of the universe that this character will exist in. That was probably the hardest thing. And once we had that, then, you know, you're looking everything from the age of 4 right the way up until more recent times, up to, you know, I'm 40, that stuff that happened in sporting experience, whether it's playing under 12s and under 8s in Wexford Wanderers, playing for my school, playing for Irish under 20s, playing for Ireland, everything and things. We kind of settled on that everything is based on a grain of truth. Some of them have a lot more grains of truth than others, but everything has, you know, we haven't just picked anything out of thin air. Everything has come off something.
And what about you, Paul? Because, I mean, like, we know you wrote the John Lennon book, or not the John Lennon book, what am I talking about? The one with the title of John Lennon. Tara Brown book. And you've also written other stuff as well, and you've written plays, and you've, I mean, basically, obviously, you're most well known for the Russell Carroll Kelly books. But this one, wait a minute, a kid's book with a rugby player who's incredibly famous. This is, you've got to have said, like, did you say, I could do this, or this is a major challenge?
Well, I knew it would be a challenge, you know, and because I'd never written a children's book before. But there was something about Gordon's life and career, the trajectory of it, that made it absolutely perfect for telling as a children's story. The first I knew about Gordon was in the late 90s, probably around 99, when he just, you know, was a sports writer at the time, and he came on the scene and everybody said, this guy is the next big thing. And he was still at school when Warren Gatland called him up to an Ireland squad. Like, that's how good he was at that age. And then he sort of disappeared off the radar, and he was gone for a few years. And then he came back. And in the year he came back, he was the player of the Six Nations Championship. So there's something there's something really kind of interesting in that story about this guy who seems to have it all, who maybe doesn't treat his talent the way he should, who is kind of learning as he goes along and making mistakes as he goes along, and then has the kind of redemption at the end. And I just thought that's absolutely perfect for a kind of morality tale for kids.
True, but by the same token, Gordon, at the time, you know, there was no rule book for what you should do. I mean, I'm looking at the front page of the Sunday Times today, and there's a picture of the fantastic performance yesterday of Hugo Keenan with his first game and all that. Now, I think, what's Hugo, 23, 24? You were much, much younger. Does it make a bit of a difference? Would you ever sit a guy like Hugo down and say, hold on a second, this is the way it could easily be, so watch yourself?
No, because thankfully, I suppose I was the experiment for everything not to do in professional rugby. Like, I did my Leaving Cert, and 2 weeks later, I was training in with the national team. So, you know, the structures weren't in place there. And then I went, you know, joined up with the Leinster team, and again, you know, the attitude there was win or lose, we're on the booze kind of thing. So it was professional, but it was fully amateur as well. We were getting paid, but we had a kind of an amateur ethos in how we were going. So the players coming through now, they're fully formed professionals by the time they leave school, and they're coming into a system that is perfectly adapted for in bringing young guys through to the national team. But the good thing about all the mistakes that I made was that they make for very, very funny anecdotes in a children's book.
Yes,
they're not necessarily noteworthy. You know, you talked about an autobiography. They're not really noteworthy in an autobiography, but they're pretty funny. And when you embellish them or you just tell them they are in certain states, they actually they're quite funny to the lens of a young person.
Yeah, absolutely. Fake tan, though, I think that's pretty significant. Anyway, we'll move on from that and we'll go on to something else here. Like, just on that note, 19 years of age, whatever, at school, Leaving Cert, etc., and then 5 years before you really get to play for Ireland. In those 5 years, did you have time to scratch your head and say, "What the hell am I doing wrong?"
Yeah, and that's what we try to explain in the book, that you can always come back from anything you've done. One, that you take responsibility for it, apologise, and then show that you're willing to work hard. And, that's largely what I had to do, was one, as a young man, I had to accept that I wasn't performing and trying and delivering at an adequate level. And that takes a little bit of introspection. Yeah. Then you have to go, but you have to, it's like, this is kind of why things translate well into a children's book. You get a reputation as a messer, it takes a lifetime to change that. And that's effectively what I had. But the bit that Paul's alluded to is that I was able to change that people's perception of me, but it does take an awful lot of hard work. And there's kids who are going to be reading this going, and they can relate to it and go, oh, maybe I have that tag as a messer, because, you know, we describe the character of Gordon as a Labrador with a big red bow around his neck. Well intended, but misdirected.
I think it was your mother that said that, was it?
Yeah, this is probably one of the things that's great, that's based off a grain of truth, but the reality was probably had a few more expletives in it.
Okay, well then exactly what he said there, what Gordon has said. Paul, is that it, that the conflict is what makes Gordon's story work so well?
Yeah, it is. And interestingly, I don't think you could tell this story about many other people's rugby careers, because, and especially I was watching that match yesterday and I was seeing, you know, players like Will Connors, you know, and they're so young, but they know how to talk to the press. You can tell, you know, they're eating the right things, they're living the right way, and there is a structure in place, whereas Gordon didn't have that. He was kind of, you know, it was like, now you're a professional, here's a contract, here's some money. By the way, the Celtic Tiger was at its height at the time, and I suppose it was that era when professional rugby players were becoming household names, like Gordon and, you know, Ronan O'Gara and Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll were kind of the first sort of superstars.
And Paul as well. And I just finished boarding school where, you know, we laughed about this. They're going, I think there's 36 bells that go off a day in boarding school. So you're so regimented. And then you come out into this, as you described it, here's the money, here's a contract, you've got to train once a day, and there's only 12 games in the whole year. So best of luck.
Yeah, best of luck. I mean, like, there's bits in the book, like little anecdotal bits, and I'm wondering how true they might be. Like, you're driving with the brother to the Aviva, or whatever it was, then Lansdowne Road, I don't know. And, you know, there's the, what do you call it, the smelly thing that you buy, the thing that smells up the car, whatever you call those things that hand off the mirror. Anyway, air freshener thing, yeah. And it was a Munster one, and this is the point. And, like, you know, wait, Dad, look, you're driving Gordon to thingy, Bob. Could you not get a Leinster one? And he shags it out the window, kind of thing. And does that line, then he says, yeah, you know, Munster won it twice, this kind of stuff. Was there all that kind of stuff going on in real life?
There is, yeah, again, elements of it. So one of the things that we, so we didn't, in Leinster, we didn't win a trophy for, I didn't win a trophy for 11 years of my career.
Yeah.
And Munster, as you know, as they have had won too, and for large, every, like Paul and I have talked about this, that the everybody assumed that Dublin was Leinster for a large part of well, for the early part of my career, and a lot of Leinster fans would have, well, sorry, areas that should support their province were supporting Munster. Places like, you know, even my town in Wexford, Kilkenny, they all supported Munster because they had much more of a affinity with them and they were winning. So we had to give them a reason to support us. And that's, you know, part of the journey of Gordon with Leinster in the book, that they have to fight for their fans to actually get them to support them.
Yeah, exactly, because you do understand why a lot of people from Leinster supported Munster. By the way, we're talking about Gordon's game here, Blue Thunder, and it is Gordon Darcy and Paul Howard together. The biggest dream, the toughest test, and it is all what happened to Gordon within the way it's written, with big help from Paul. Paul, did you write the whole thing, did you, and just listen to Gordon?
No, one of the great things about Gordon is he's very, very involved in the writing process. So it's not... And even in the sort of conception process as well, you know, so we sat down at the beginning of the project and we sort of mapped out what storylines. Gordon told me what areas he wanted to cover. And between us, we came up with a storyline. And then it was just back and forth constantly during the writing process. I would write something and send it to Gordon and he would say, no, I think it needs to be a bit more this way, or I think that character needs to act in the opposite way that he does. And this was all going on during lockdown, which was great because I needed something to work on that gave me a bit of happiness. And I think Gordon felt the same way. You know, there was so much doom around, as there is again now. But back in March and April, when there was all that uncertainty, it was nice to have something like this to work on. Something made me laugh, and something as we were writing it, we kind of knew that kids would laugh at as well, and they'd get enjoyment from it.
Yeah, we should point out here, by the way, that the first cap was in 99. You retired in 15, Gordon. We're talking three European Cups, two Six Nations, a Grand Slam in 09. I mean, you know, let's look at the great side as well, which is pretty good on that level. But I just want to think of something here. Like, you have Joe Schmidt, obviously, is in and out of the book. Like, there's one scene where you're training in an All Blacks kind of way, of running up and down one length of the pitch and the other length, and changing the switching the throwing of the ball and all this kind of stuff, and different speeds, and it gets very difficult. And somebody says, you know, like, you take loads of hours to do it right, even if it stays till 3 o'clock in the morning. And there's one quote: a good culture was one where the players, not the coach, enforced the standards. So Joe Smith was the one who said that. I presume he was great, was he?
He was just phenomenal with what he achieved in with Leinster. And the character of Joe in the book has to actually evolve, because the Leinster journey obviously starts with Mike Ruddock as the, you know, my first professional coach, and Gary Ella and Michael Checa and Joe himself. So his character actually evolves and tries to represent some aspects of their struggles that each of those coaches had, and then culminating in the final, which is, you know, do Leinster win the final? Has the journey been worth the, you know, has the squeeze been worth it up to that point? But it is an awful lot of the way Joe tried to coach, and a lot of what he tried to do was that you respect each other and you trust each other, but you have to earn each other's trust and respect in that same breath. Oh,
yeah. Well, then, with these kind of stories, Paul, and you hear them from Gordon, I mean, I mentioned the fake tanning earlier on, like, when you hear about this, you say, right, this is ripe for, like, making a great joke out of the whole thing. And is that what happens?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Gordon is that he when he comes to when he's come to both of the books so far, he comes with pages and pages of notes and pages of ideas. And that's an absolute dream, you know. So I'm kind of going through all these ideas, and I'm sort of sifting out what we've got, what we can't use, because there's just so much material, you know. And I suppose what I'd be looking for is stories that have a moral for kids, you know, stories that kids can relate to, things that might happen in their own lives. Like in the first book, for instance, you know, Gordon has this, he gets all this sort of celebrity, you know, and it all goes to his head a little bit. And he has a film premiere and he goes to the film premiere instead of going to something important that was happening in school. Mm. And I just thought those kind of things are kind of easy for kids to understand, you know, that this is a young guy who's totally lost the run of himself. And he needs to be pulled back in. But there's so much of that kind of material, and that's the great thing. Gordon learned so many lessons, and he's, you know, he's a very kind of reflective kind of guy as well, and that works really, really well. So when Gordon is giving me his notes and giving me the stories he wants to highlight, he's not looking for the stories that will show him at his very, very best in the book. He's looking for the stories that will... This is something I learned from, and kids can learn from as well.
Well, speaking of kids learning from something here, Gordon, I mean, there are some real issues raised in the book that kids will definitely have faced at some point in their lives, as well as many adults. Tell me about the rivalry between players for spots and how that manifests itself in bullying in the book.
Yeah, like one of the things you get in any walk of life in school and everything, there is competition for everything. It's just, it's, you know, whether it's schoolwork or whether it's on the team in rugby. I played for nearly 18 years, and you have to be very, very competitive, and very lucky to play in a lot of different teams as well. And sometimes the competition is very healthy and other times it's not. And how you deal with that, and quite a sensitive individual, and always, it's probably not a great characteristic to have when you're playing professional sport, because it's that alpha male environment. But you have to be able to, deal with characters that are very, very different to yours, to me. And I suppose that was one of the things we wanted to explain. And it's not necessarily bullying as such, but just people that you don't necessarily get on with. And that specific character in the book is a representation of a lot of things that were wrong in Leinster, and that they needed to change and it needed to change.
The thing there with the Harlequins you have there, and like Will Greenwood, and you're lining out kind of at the beginning, you have to look up to him. You're looking at a tree, basically. You're looking at a guy so big and so scary who's won, you know, English medals and Lions and all the rest of it. Before a game, do you get really scared? Do you have a sleepless night, and then once the game starts, to hell with it, off you go?
At the start I used to, because I wouldn't have a bank of work done. I wouldn't have basically, you know, the thing, attention to detail. I would be leaving things unchecked. So going into games, going, I'm not really sure. I'm not prepared for this. But once I got my second chance back, I made it kind of a little thing to myself that I would never, ever let this opportunity go if I was lucky enough to get another one. So once I came back into started fulfilling my potential, I didn't get nervous, because I knew I was prepared going in. If anything, I became, I wanted to, if it's a Will Greenwood or a Man Anu or Yannick Jojean for France or Mike Tindall for England, like if the best players in the world were playing, I wanted to prove that I could play against them and I could outplay them.
Right, indeed. Well, listen, Paul, finally, as a question to you, just about like when you heard the story, I mean, like there's elements of Gordon going through his life. One of the things might be that he's trying to get people to like him. In this book here, he's not necessarily, he's just now completely like happy in himself and is therefore able to tell all stories, self-deprecating and warts and all. Isn't that really it?
Yeah, that is it. You know, we're actually we're sitting down very soon to plot out the third book of the series.
And, you're not doing the movie yet, no?
The movie will come, you know. Yeah. But yeah, we're planning to do the third one, and it's going to cover the Gordon's first Lions tour. So there's going to be some interesting stories to come out of that one as well. But he's definitely learned a lot more in Blue Thunder. But there's still challenges he has to face, and there will be more in the next one as well.
All right. And I presume, Gordon, you'll be there on the telly next Saturday night watching at 8:05. You will, yeah?
Well, I'll be sitting at home with the kids. Fingers crossed, and hopefully we get a similar scoreline.
50-17, that'd be pretty good.
Listen, we've got a great bunch of kids out there. Great experience. Got Johnny Sexton back playing, Conor Murray. We got them all there. So let's fingers crossed we get a bonus point win, and it would make a fantastic. A little bit like 2009, the recession. We won a Grand Slam then, so we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah,
so
we could do it
now.
Nothing
like the boys. Yeah,
well
exactly.
Said indeed. Well, Gordon's game, Blue Thunder. I bet that's not right. It's Gordon's game, Blue Thunder, by Gordon Darcy and Paul Howard. It's the second book in the Gordon's Game series for kids, published by Sandy Cove, and for old people too. It's available. Oh, I mean, older people. Phew. And to hell with it. Anyway, it's available nationwide. Gordon Darcy, Paul Howard. Thanks a million for joining me on the program today, folks.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.